You know, my house in 2014 cost 1,818 Bitcoin. In 2014, 1,818 Bitcoin. Today, it's worth about 16 Bitcoin. 16. And in 5 years, it's going to be worth about 2. So, you know, once I saw that, I started divesting and selling as much real estate as I could, because real estate isn't coming close to that. Real estate typically doesn't even do better than stocks. It just offers certain tax advantages for some people and some corporations. And if you are a professional at real estate, if you can flip real estate, if you want to run Airbnb companies, and I've done all of that, then that's great. But, you know, that's also a lifestyle. Like, you need to have a truck and tools and whatnot, because if you start paying everybody for all that stuff, well, now you just created a business which has risk and you lower your margins. And so you're really down to like 4%, 5%, 6% annually on what you're really making, which is ridiculous, put up against, you know, Bitcoin's 86% CAGR over the last 10 years.
Hello, guys. Welcome once again to BitConnor Podcast. We have been doing quite several episodes. Really intense, right? I hope that you have been enjoying it. Last episode was really incredible. We have talked a lot about the Tornado Cash and other things circling around, but we have been talking a little bit more of politics, and it's really odd that we do that in the podcast, but sometimes we need to just catch up what's going on in the world. But right now, I would like to slow down and do some educational backroot efforts, because even Bitcoin, it's for everyone, and even if it's growing or not, we still need to educate. We need to sometimes remember that we're still early. So that's our mission, not just in El Salvador, but to all of us that we are Bitcoiners. And for newcomers, welcome. So anyways, you'll see that this is going to be a really interesting episode, especially because this guest has a really interesting background, actually. Has had so many different lives, past lives, we'll discover about us. But anyways, I just want to welcome Terrence Michael to BitConnor. Welcome.
Thanks, Juan. How's it going?
Everything is good. Super chill.
Great.
What about you?
So, good. Yeah, all's good. Bitcoin is good. Bitcoin network is working 10 minutes at a time. I see the blocks coming in on average, so can't complain.
Still working?
Yeah. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, let's do some educational podcast about Bitcoin. First of all, it's really interesting, your background. I have thought so many things about how to approach it, but we'll see how it goes, because you have had so many different lives. So if you can share a little bit to give us a little bit of context about yourself, and then probably we can discuss a little bit, you know, the Bitcoin rabbit hole journey and other stuff.
Okay, let's see. Well, I've been producing movies and TV shows for a long time, and to store that wealth, I have been putting it into real estate, which got me deep into real estate. And then when Bitcoin came around, I saw that that was a better way to store my wealth, an easier way to store my wealth. And so that's what brought me into Bitcoin. And so now I'm here, and I've been here for about 8 years now.
That's awesome. But how do you pivot from first Hollywood, then to real estate, and then into Bitcoin? First of all, you said that you just find out about Bitcoin, but what actually clicks you? We have so many different approaches for it, I think. Depends who you're talking, right?
Well, I think we're all searching for ways to save, right? Because unless you want to be on the hamster wheel or perform jobs that you don't like, do projects that you're not passionate about, you're always going to keep working, because even if you think you have savings, because that savings in political currencies gets debased, you can't really fully plan with full confidence for retirement. You can't fully say, well, I can retire at this age because I have X amount in the bank. Because one, you don't know if it's going to be in the bank. You don't know if that's going to be confiscated or censored or surveilled. You also don't know if it's going to be inflated such that it just won't carry the energy that you secured it as, right? People that look at numbers in a bank, unfortunately, you know, it worked for a time when we were on the gold standard, but ever since we've depegged, it just doesn't work, because we're trying to now save in a currency rather than in money.
Yeah.
And so again, whether you're looking for it, whether people realize it or not, they are searching for a better way to save. And before they realize that that's what they're doing, you know, they're taking on a second job, they're taking on a third job, they're migrating to where all the money is flowing. There's a real estate boom and suddenly everyone's becoming a realtor. Should those people be realtors? Probably not. Maybe that one person should be a math professor. Maybe that other, you know, should teach kids. That other person should be a plumber. Like where your skills and passion lie, and, you know, where your academics have been in the past, your experiences. You know, if everyone can specialize, that's the whole point of an economy. The entire point of an economy is that everyone gets to specialize. They learn a trade. Why do you learn a trade? So you can trade what you're doing with someone else, right? And money is just the authentication token in between those trades. So until people realize that, they're still just going to be looking for band-aids and alternates and surrogates to fix that. They just don't realize that that's what they're doing. They're like, why am I working harder? Why do I have this side hobby? Why did I start this other business with my friends? Oh, hey, I see an opportunity. Here's a dilapidated house. Oh, I could fix it up and then maybe sell it. Yeah, but now you're leveraging, you're borrowing, you're taking risks, and that's not even available to most people. And that also just takes you away from what you should be doing for the world. It takes you away from your purpose and how you want to show up in life. Everyone wants to show up in life in a certain way. And obviously, everyone needs to do work to get there. But if you've done the work and you're now ready and you have a feasible way to provide value into an economy, you should be able to secure that. And so people, until they study and learn what money is and learn about monetary history and economics and something that all Bitcoiners have done, they won't understand the problem. And so I didn't understand the problem. But, you know, again, to answer your question, and like I said earlier, that's why I found real estate. Because until you understand that money's broken, you look at currency as an external scorecard. You look at it just in numbers and you just want higher numbers. And so, you know, making movies in Hollywood, we make a ton of money. We make a lot of money, but we don't make necessarily any more money than other people because we don't work all the time. You go make a TV show and it doesn't get picked up for the next season. You go make a movie and then you have 2 years before you're able to find funding or get hired on another film, right? So that's just the way Hollywood is. Hollywood is a group of tradesmen. It's a group of traveling. It's a traveling circus where everyone's just, you know, it's mostly blue collar people working. The red carpet is just for the actors in front of the camera, but everybody behind the camera, they're all in unions, they're in trades, they're in guilds, they're all working and they're, you know, they all get their paychecks. And so real estate was a way for me to continue doing that, but to also secure that, because real estate, you know, you can't save in Hollywood. All you do is you get a currency, but then what am I going to do? Put it in the bank? So real estate becomes the piggy bank, and it's been the world's piggy bank for a long time. About a third of all the global money is in real estate, and most of that is in income or investment properties. A lot of that isn't for where people live. I get it if someone wants to buy a house just to live, even though that's a terrible investment. It has other monetary benefits. But so, you know, we're sort of conditioned and programmed to thinking, well, if you want to be responsible, if you want to be an adult, if you want to be smart, you should be buying real estate. You know, real estate's what the big responsible boys do. That's what you should do. And so I learned about real estate, even though that's not where my talents were. That's not how I was educated. I didn't even own a hammer when I bought my first house. But the first house I bought, I could barely afford. And, you know, the walls were falling apart. The roof was leaking. But I didn't care. You know, I just lived in it and I learned how to fix it, right? I showed my proof of work. But so there's a lot. But then the real estate would take me away from the movies, or the movies would take me away from the real estate. It's like, I can't have two jobs.
Sorry, come through.
It was just earlier on. It was after I'd already produced a bunch of movies. I'd produced like 10 movies or something when I started to get into real estate, you know, and then eventually 20 movies and 30 TV shows. And, you know, and I'll still make movies and TV shows, but I now get to be selective and I get to go do something that I want to do, because I don't have to do it to chase more currency, because I don't save in currency anymore. I don't save in the US dollar. I operate on a Bitcoin standard. And so because I operate on a Bitcoin standard, I can view everything in Bitcoin terms, which people know creates a deflationary system for yourself because you are using a fixed measurement. You know, my house in 2014 cost 1,818 Bitcoin. In 2014, 1,818 Bitcoin. Today, it's worth about 16 Bitcoin. 16. And in 5 years, it's going to be worth about 2. So, you know, once I saw that, I started divesting and selling as much real estate as I could because real estate isn't coming close to that. Real estate typically doesn't even do better than stocks. It just offers certain tax advantages for some people and some corporations. And if you are a professional at real estate, if you can flip real estate, if you want to run Airbnb companies, and I've done all of that, then that's great. But, you know, that's also a lifestyle. Like you need to have a truck and tools and whatnot, because if you start paying everybody for all that stuff, well, now you just created a business which has risk and you lower your margins. And so you're really down to like 4%, 5%, 6% annually on what you're really making, which is ridiculous put up against, you know, Bitcoin's 86% CAGR over the last 10 years.
Absolutely. Another question that I have is that you also wrote a book called Proof of Money, right? So
yeah.
What inspired you to write it? Now I can see a little bit, but besides your inspiration.
Well, I'm also a writer, you know, because I write in Hollywood and I've written books. So I wrote a self-improvement book. And then when I got deep into real estate, I wrote a real estate book. And so unlike some people in Bitcoin who are Bitcoiners, I mean, they're very knowledgeable Bitcoiners, they decide to write because they want to share their knowledge, which I think is terrific. But some of that comes off too much like a textbook, because some of the Bitcoiners, or technical, but just it's the messaging. Some of the Bitcoiners aren't writers. So I think I'm one of the few people, I'm sure there's others, but I think I'm one of the few people who came into Bitcoin who's already a writer, who then discovered Bitcoin and said, I can write about this. I can message it better because I'm a storyteller and I know how to, whatever. It's like, a lot of the books say the same thing, and I think all books are great. I think they're super healthy. I think there's just more portals. There's more gateways for people. And whoever's in your circle and near you that finds your book, that's the way in. So, you know, writing is very much a selfish process. It's very much a selfish task because, you know, most writers will tell you when they write, they're really writing to synthesize all of their own thoughts and everything that they've learned. And it also forces you, because when you write, something's going to be immortalized and it's going to be out there for everyone to see forever. It forces you to really, really think critically about what you know and what you don't know and research. So I wrote the book partially for me to research and find out where were my weaknesses, what areas of Bitcoin did I not fully understand, and then write to it. And then, you know, a lot of writing tips out there are, you know, to like picture, you know, one or two people that are important to you that you, you know, you want this message to be for. And, you know, I was picturing some of my family members. I was picturing my dad even, and my mom and my sister and people like that. And I was like, you know, they're not, you know, into computers or economics or even business. And I was just like, I want to write something that they can understand. They're smart people. They invest in stocks. They own real estate. They have businesses. But it's like, how can I write to them? So I wanted to write to those people. I wanted to write to the real estate bros, to the stock bros, to Wall Street people, to people that are already doing okay financially, because where I live, people are mostly doing okay financially. They don't, you know, no one over here needs to, you know, escape or flee borders, you know, fortunately. But we're still being censored and surveilled just in the form of debasement. Our future self is being censored, right? Like, hey, is my money being confiscated in my bank? Yeah, it really is, because in 10 years, I can't buy the same things I can today. So I really am being confiscated on in a political currency like the dollar. So I wanted to explain that to them, and I use a lot of analogies and a lot of story. But, you know, I don't want to say that my book is any better than anyone else's. It's definitely not. There are great books out there. But people that have read my book, that are completely new, that don't know Bitcoin at all, they've told me for them, it's been, you know, mind-blowing. They've walked around in a daze, you know, going, oh my God, the world is not as I thought. How do I get Bitcoin as fast as possible? And that's what I want people to do. I want to spark that curiosity.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, I have seen some things about your books, and I know that you use a lot of analogies. to explain like complex financial ideas, for example, right, into simple terms, let's say. So could you share like one of your, let's say, I don't know if the most complex or the most, analogy that, for example, because there are some things that, for example, inflation, people don't know how inflation actually works, right? Or the deflationary system or whatever. But one of the analogies that you found that it was really effective to anyone that is coming, a newcomer here, because probably it will happen here as well. There are a lot of people that are listening to the podcast for the first time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can go into any area. I mean, if you want, I can start with inflation. But so people think they know what inflation is, but they just think of prices going up. But here's a better way to think of inflation. This will put it into perspective. So imagine that the world, all the products, the services, the entire world economy is a pizza. Okay. And let's make it a 10 slice pizza. Okay. So the entire world, the world's round, the pizza's round. Here it is. There's 10 slices. So Juan, you say to me, you want a pool in your house and I'm a pool builder. Hey, I'm going to build a pool for you, Juan. Okay. So for my services, for me, I have to hire my workers. We got to dig the hole, make your pool, everything. That's going to cost one slice of pizza. I know that one slice, all the cheese, the pepperoni, the calories, that'll feed my family, feed my workers. I get to save a little bit until I get my next pool job, but I'm going to charge you one pizza. Okay. And you agree to that. You're like, I can afford one. And remember, the whole world is only 10 slices, right? So it's an expensive pool, but the government comes in and they want to stimulate the economy. They want to print money, right? They want to pay for their wars, whatever. No government can add products or services to an economy. They don't add anything. They really, when they print, they're re-slicing that pizza. So that 10 slice pizza, the same amount of calories, it's the same size. Instead of 10, they just now made it 20. So now there's 20 slices. So you Juan, you come to me and you're like, hey, I'm ready for the pool. Here's my one slice. And I say, that one slice looks a lot smaller, right? Because now there's 20 slices. Your slice got cut in half. I'm like, you know what? I need two slices. Now, I don't necessarily want any more pizza. I don't want to have to charge you more because I'm going to lose you as a customer. But your two slices, now that they've been all re-sliced, two slices of a 20-slice economy is the same as one of 10, right? One divided by 10, the same as two divided by 20. So now the pool costs two slices. And you're telling your neighbors and your friends like, I can't believe I'm now paying two slices for this pool. The guy told me it was one, but I just need the same amount of calories. And so now when you go to your job, you need more slices. And now that employer needs more slices because everything's been resliced. That's inflation. Inflation is just a number. The products and services are the same. And that's what I think people don't get. They just are programmed and they grow up thinking, yeah, well, everything should cost more over time. No, no one in a free, perfect economy and a perfect market wants to raise prices on anyone. You don't need to raise prices on anyone because you become more efficient. You become more productive. Technology advances it. You can now make more pizza. You can make pizza faster, blah, blah, blah. You actually can charge less. And also, if you're on a fixed monetary system, like say Bitcoin, you only need less, just like with my house example. Right? You get the same utility, but now my house is down to 15 Bitcoin, not 1,818 Bitcoin. Absolutely. So I like to explain inflation that way, and that the numbers in the system just get resliced. There's no new products or services.
Yeah, no, what I was going to say is that now I'm really interested because one of the things that I like is, for example, these things that you do, these kind of analogies that explain complex things, you know, simple things. But I think the most challenging thing for us is to explain Bitcoin to everyone else, right? So how do you onboard new people into Bitcoin? I love this question because every Bitcoiner have a different analogy or story. How do you explain Bitcoin for the first time to anyone?
Cuando dejas tus activos digitales en un exchange o en custodia de alguien más, te expones a riesgos de terceros no deseados. A diferencia del sistema bancario tradicional, Bitcoin te permite tomar el control total de tus fondos utilizando tus propias claves privadas. Esto te permite ser soberano y esencialmente tu propio banco. Al tomar el control de tus Bitcoin, puedes evitar riesgos innecesarios de terceros, Almacenar tus Bitcoin en custodia de terceros como los exchanges puede exponerte a ataques de actores malintencionados, gobiernos o estafadores que lo único que quieren es apoderarse de tu dinero. Las billeteras de hardware aumentan la seguridad de tu billetera porque tus claves privadas se almacenan en un dispositivo especializado que no está siempre conectado al Internet. Como te he dicho antes, mantener tus claves almacenadas en un dispositivo en línea puede exponerte a factores adicionales de ataque, por lo que se recomienda usar una billetera de hardware al almacenar grandes cantidades de Bitcoin durante largos periodos de tiempo. Jade es una billetera de hardware no custodial para Bitcoins y Liquid que ofrece opciones de firma simple y firmas múltiples. Yo personalmente lo utilizo para almacenar mis Bitcoins, ya que me siento mucho más seguro manteniendo mis Bitcoins en una billetera fría que en una almacenada, por ejemplo, en mi teléfono. Si estás pensando en adquirir uno para ti, no olvides utilizar el código de descuento de nuestro show, BitCorner Podcast. De esta forma estarás apoyando directamente el show y además obtendrás un 10% de descuento para la compra de tu billetera fría.
So usually I usually just ask them a question, and I have to start there because everyone looks and comes into Bitcoin differently,
Absolutely.
Right? Like some people want to technically exactly know what exactly is Bitcoin. And then and then you can say exactly what Bitcoin is. But some people look at it as a speculative asset. Some people think of it as a store of value. Some people want
digital
to come in.
Money.
A lot of people, yeah, they're like, how is it money? But they mostly think it's a currency because it unfortunately was branded cryptocurrency. I wish it wasn't, but because of that, people get confused. And then a lot of people want to know about mining because they think they can do something with their computer and win Bitcoin. They're like, what? Tell me about Bitcoin mining. Like, I don't want to pay 120 grand for a Bitcoin. Like, how do I mine it on my computer? I think it just depends who it is. But, you know, in general, you know, us Bitcoiners know this, but I think we need to keep things simple. And all Bitcoin does is it allows you to transfer value from one user to another user without the need for a third party. That's it. Those two sentences are it. Now, it sounds simple, but that really is everything. Me transferring my value that I've worked hard for and saved for to you. But to be able to do that without having to trust any third party is the big idea. And within that, when you break all that apart, that's how we see how valuable Bitcoin is, because that's secured by proof of work. It's secured by the nodes that keeps away the banks and people from stopping us and 24/7, 365 and not reversing anything and not faking anything, and that we all have the ledger distributed, that we're distributing trust. And now that's, you know, like to some people, like, I don't get it. I don't care. And that's why I wouldn't start like that for some people. The people that come in and look at it as a speculative asset, I would start off with it saying, well, do you save? Yes. What are you saving for? Okay. How's that going for you? How is your savings doing? 1%, whatever. Like, okay, great. How are your stocks doing? I don't know, 8 or 9%. Okay. Would you like to talk about something that's been doing 85% every year for the last 10 years on average? Right? Because you just want to spark curiosity. The reason I think that's important before going down into what Bitcoin is technically is because that's how we all got here. I bet you that's how you got here. That's how I got here. We were like, what is this thing? People are making money off of it. Let me learn about it. And many of us get wrecked because of it, because we didn't learn. But that is what first brings people in. That's why I think the Bitcoin treasury companies are helpful. That's why I think the ETFs are helpful. That's why I think the news is helpful. Even if that distracts people slightly, I think people need to first come in. Number go up. NGU is really important. And NGU, I think, will orange pill more people than all of the other education that we're doing. Now, once they come in and the number starts going up, then it is important for them to understand what they have and what it is. Because we've never, ever been able to have something that is scarce and finite and knowably scarce and finite and transparent. And how big of an idea it is that this is perfect collateral, that's it's engineered, because we've never, ever. So the whole reason my book is titled Proof of Money, the whole reason is that my thesis is that for the first time ever, we have proof of money. We've never had money. Everything we've had has been a substitute, a surrogate, whatever we could pick up or find, gold, shell, salt, tobacco, hides, feathers. We're finding these things and like saying, okay, well, this is better than that. Because it's harder to make, it's harder to fake, and harder for someone to take. Bitcoin is the first one's like, oh, what are all the properties? Oh, and here's something I'll ask people who are like, wait, you said Bitcoin's money? I'll say, get a pen and paper. Write down everything that you think perfect money should be. Write it down. Bitcoiners already know these attributes, these 5 to 7 attributes, but most people haven't thought about it, but they'll arrive at the same attributes. If they really think about it, they're gonna be like, well, I want to, you know, be able to take it somewhere. Oh, you want it to be portable. Yeah. Okay. Well, I should be able to divide it up into small pieces, big, you know, whatever, like transport it, all that stuff. I don't want someone to take it. And so when they break it down and you spend some time with them, like, great. So now what's the best thing that can do that for you? And then you can show them how Bitcoin can do that and that no one can stop it. So there isn't any one great way. It's a good question, Juan, but there's no great way because it depends who's asking. When I have real estate people ask me, and I have a lot of real estate people ask me, I just tell them how it's property, how it's perfect property. Imagine having your perfect house, but now you can transport the house anywhere you want. Now you can change the utility of the house. Oh, you want it to be an apartment complex tomorrow? You want it to be a storage unit next week? You know, you want to move it over to Dubai? Like, no lines drawn in sand can prevent you. And by the way, if you're just going to hold on to it, why would you be paying property taxes? And why is it deteriorating? Why are you saving your money in something that deteriorates? That's really, really weird, right? Real estate was never supposed to be real estate investing. It was supposed to be real estate living, but it became real estate investing because our money is so broken. So, you know, I think it just depends who the person is because it's so many different things to so many different people. Just as money is, right? Money means different things to different people.
Absolutely. No, and I totally agree that it depends who you're talking to. That's why I think that the approach is really different. You mentioned something about real estate, and actually I'm curious in both of the fields that you have been working on. In general, how do you perceive, because this is depend, of course, where you live and the circle and whatever, but how do you perceive the integration of Bitcoin, one, in real estate and then in Hollywood, if there's
the integration?
It means that if people are starting to know about it or using it, for example, there's this company that you know, RBTC, that it's located everywhere, that tries to emulate, right, Airbnb, but that's a Bitcoin. So those kind of things.
I mean, I think it's good. I think basically if you view Bitcoin as a savings technology, which really is how everybody should view it, if everyone just views Bitcoin as a savings technology, if Satoshi wrote in the white paper, hey, I have come up with a peer-to-peer savings technology, it would have been so much more helpful. Some people won't like that. They may not be popular, but if you think about it, okay, it's a savings technology. So why? Well, one, we've never had savings, because if savings is simply supposed to be, I painted this barn, I spent 8 hours, I'm getting paid, I only need to spend 6 hours of that barn's currency to live, I want to save these 2 hours for 10 years from now, well, that's savings, but you can't, right? We know because of inflation, because of currency debasement, we can't. So that's all of the savings. And because we can't save, we have to take risks, we have to invest. And there's companies that can implode. There's reputational risk because the founder does, you know, Elon Musk does something weird and you lose your money, or, you know, they inflate the stock. So they dilute all their shareholders, you know, or you're having to chase artwork and, you know, precious metals and all kinds of things that might work for periods of time, but they're just not perfect. And there's lots of friction and there's lots of risk. So whether it's real estate, whether it's a company, whether it's a nation, whether it's a pension, whether it's a nonprofit or a person, anyone who has worked hard and has fiat that they don't need to spend today for milk and eggs should put it in the best savings technology possible. And to me, Bitcoin is just a savings technology. So how does it integrate with real estate? Well, real estate is a cash business. There's lots of cash flow depending on what kind of real estate you have, with Airbnbs or rentals or leases. And at the same time, if you're developing, you're raising a lot of cash, but you don't spend all the cash on day one. Like, cash needs to sit somewhere. So if cash is just, you know, melting, why not have it frozen perfectly in Bitcoin, where the thermometer is as cold as possible, right? And no central bank can turn that thermometer and lower the, you know, the temperature of all the refrigerators. So, or raise the rate, actually. I had that backwards. But so I think I think Bitcoin can integrate into anything. And same with movies. You know, most people don't know this, but, you know, movies, They take anywhere from like 4 to 7 years to return all of their money because it's, you know, you're making a large IP, and people hear about the box office that happens right away. But the box office happens about 18 months after you started making it, first of all, right? Because you got to shoot it and make it and post it and market it. Then that comes out. And then it's like, then you have your streamers, and then you're selling to 180 different countries in all kinds of media and formats and, you know, pay-per-view, and you're bundling things. And so you're licensing, and then you're syndicating, and you're selling it to TV, terrestrial television and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so because it takes so long, it's, you know, you can not only store a lot of that in Bitcoin, you can, when you set out to make the film, you can lower your risk. Let's say you have a $10 million budget for your movie. Well, make your movie for $8 million and put $2 million of that in Bitcoin. Your movie could potentially lose all of its $8 million and you still get it all back for your investors. Or you can just raise $2 million more on the top end. You know, because if you have 15, 20, 30% in Bitcoin, imagine that growing over that 4 to 7 year period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem, you know, Hollywood, you know, most films do not make money, partially because of the broken distribution system. You need to align yourself with like 4 to 5 distributors ultimately who own everything. They own everything, and they're going to get their marketing fees and distribution fees before you, the producer, ever get a dime, which is why most people just try to raise their fees and get as big fees as possible, because there isn't really significant back end in Hollywood. And so if you have that in, but if you go out and make it on your own and you put that in Bitcoin, you don't need Hollywood, right? Which is sort of like the non-KYC way to make a movie. It's the non-KYC Bitcoin way. Like, it's your Bitcoin, it's your movie, you know, not your Bitcoin, not your movie, not your Bitcoin. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, but I get you. You know, that it's something really interesting that actually I would like to ask you as well. I have a partnership with Bitcoin Film Fest. So normally once a month, we talk with filmmakers or any artists. Right now we're focusing on filmmakers, and we have discussed a little bit how Bitcoin has been integrated little by little with independent movies, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that you also mentioned is that in Hollywood, for example, you had to rely on different companies and the budget, you had to make a return. But when you do independent films, well, first you don't need a company. Anyone that can fund your, who wants to fund your movie, they just send you directly to Euro, the Bitcoin. That's one of the beautiful advantages. So that's why it was kind of my previous question that it was, you seen that probably can pivot. I know, or at least we have seen in Europe that little by little independent films and independent filmmakers are using more and more Bitcoin, not just to make Bitcoin films, just to make like short movies or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So it will be great to see that. And the other thing that I want to ask you, and this is just out of curiosity, because right now there's a lot of noise, especially in the pop culture, because you mentioned that actually the box office is not really important. But I just want to learn this thing, that actually then how it make a movie really rental. You already mentioned a little bit of that, but for example, let's say the Jurassic Park, Superman, and the Fantastic Four, that right now you have seen that they say no, but if they make X amount of money in the box office, then it's a failure. So that is now how the movie actually measured their success.
Well, so those big films do initially try to track what the success will be based on the box office. I'm just saying the box office is not all of the money that the film comes in. Like, that's just the initial push, right? But it's really the locomotive for everything else. So if Jurassic Park comes out and it makes, you know, whatever, $300 million at the box office, over the life of that film, you got to go down 4 to 7 years, it's going to make over $1 billion. But they might determine that as a failure based on all their other metrics. But what they're also doing is they're cross-collateralizing. They're mixing all of their films. So Jurassic Park might win, Fantastic Four might win, but there are other 15 movies have all lost, and it's all pulled that down. And so because they're cross-collateralizing, the producers now aren't getting their back end. So it's, you know, Hollywood accounting.
All right.
But yeah, I like the Bitcoin Film Festival, by the way. You mentioned that. I have been the judge. I've been with four other... five of us judges for the last 2 years on the film festival. just been fun.
Yeah, it's a great festival. So yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about that. What do you think about what I mentioned, that it could be really impulse independent films? Or do you think that it can actually make Bitcoin easier to make films, even if they're not just independent filmmakers, but small companies, let's say, that it can integrate to impulse that? Have you seen, I don't know if you have seen, now that you have been judged, I don't know if you have seen that there's more, let's say, use of Bitcoin in Europe or in the US or in Latin America. What have you seen in the context of all this?
Well, yeah, like I was saying a little earlier, I think anyone who is setting out to make anything, whether it's a movie or, you know, any business, real estate, it doesn't matter. If you can put a portion of that budget into Bitcoin, try to lower the budget 15-20% and put the rest in Bitcoin or raise a little bit more, you're going to lower your risk. The Bitcoin alone could secure any losses on the fiat side. Film, especially, is so ridiculously risky because you're beholden to the subjectivity of the audience. And audiences are very, very fickle. And if they don't like a film and it starts going social, people aren't even going to go check it out. So you might say, well, that really sucks. But hey, we've got 20% of this, of the budget in Bitcoin, and it's sitting here in cold storage. Let's wait for the 4 to 7 years and see how this pans out. That could make all the investors whole alone, just like that. Also, in the future, maybe it's another source of revenue, not revenue, but of capital, of ways to raise money in the first place. You know, you, Juan, want to go make your independent movie, and you have like some $5 million movie. You've got the budget. You're ready to make it. And you know that Hollywood's going to mess it up or not going to want to make your film. Well, now you go out to the Bitcoin community. You know, depending on where Bitcoin sits and how much people believe in what you're doing or care about it or just want to have an experience or fun, maybe it gets crowdfunded by some Bitcoiners.
Yeah. And another question is that what are the because you told me that you have been judged and Bitcoin Film Fest. What are the metrics, or how do you, because they have different categories, right? Like just like the Oscar and whatever, Venice. So
I set up a system that we use for voting where I said, let's evaluate the three E's. And this is something that I have been doing in Hollywood, where one, and we rate them like on a scale of 1 to 10. And it's like, so one, entertaining, right? Like a lot of people set out to make a movie and they're trying to deliver a message. They're trying to make a point, which is at the end of the day, it has to be entertaining, right? People are going to watch a movie to be entertained. And so some people just fail at that. So we rate it just, number one, how entertaining is it? Two, is it engaging? Does it keep you there? Are you compelled, right? Is it suspenseful? Are there stakes? Is it dramatic? Is this a subject I care about? You know, if I want to fast forward, or I want to leave, or I'm thinking about doing something else, you know, that adjusts the score. It's not engaging. It's not keeping you there. And good filmmaking will keep you there. Three, is it enlightening? So beyond entertaining and beyond keeping you there, am I thinking about something in a different way? I'm like, wow, I didn't think about that. Like, that's really amazing. That's what's cool about Bitcoin. We know that Bitcoin, in a sense, is all three of those. Right? It's definitely entertaining when we come in because we like the price, and then it's engaging once we start learning, and then it's definitely enlightening because we reach this sort of philosophical and spiritual plateau where we realize that Bitcoin simply allows us to show up as who we want to be. It reveals who our true selves are because it strips away the distortion and the destruction of fiat, where we're having to chase more dollars and do all these things that we don't like to do. So for the film festival, I set up those three E's, and you know, that's what the five or six of us judges.
Okay, really interesting. Yeah, it's good to know. And I was just thinking why I never asked even to the guys of Bitcoin Film Fest, but it's good to know how you measured these things, the winners and everything. All right, we're at the middle of the podcast. I told you that we have this little game. I want to do it.
Oh yeah,
right now. You so. The audience already know how it works. My previous guests have a question for my next guest. So, and by the way, at the end of the episode, you will have the chance to meet a question for my next guest. I'll tell you who it is. Just let me find it really quick because we have a video here. So my previous guest was Frank Corba. Do you know him?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's now in the press room at the White House, which is really cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's a fun little fact. He used to be a PA on The Apprentice. He would drive Donald Trump to set on the TV show The Apprentice.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, fun little fact.
I don't know if most people know that, but
that's really interesting.
A lot of my friends worked on that show.
Really? That's so cool. Wow, what a small world as well.
Yeah. Hollywood's very small.
I'm always interested to hear what people have to say. To what degree do you think the Bitcoin community should be involved in politics on any level, global politics, local politics? To what degree should Bitcoiners be engaging with politicians?
Oh boy. Yeah, I see that's perfect coming from him. That's a great question. I have mixed feelings, but just to give a quick answer, I think they should be. I think it is good because politicians are just another group of people that we should orange pill and educate properly. They're still going to be politicians. They're still going to play politician games. But I think the more that they can see what we see, it might slightly help them shift towards truth and transparency, because that's what Bitcoin has taught all of us Bitcoiners. Once we see that there is this honest system, it helps us replicate that and demand that in other areas of our life. And that would be beautiful if we could get politicians to do that. That might be too lofty a goal.
Absolutely. By the way, just out of curiosity, do you really, that's something that I asked to some Bitcoiners that live in the US or are from there. Do you think that Donald Trump actually gets it, or just a shit show?
I don't personally think he really gets it. No. I think he's where we were in our first 6 months or year when most Bitcoiners came in. And
that's my
sense.
He
hears some of the sayings, he's parroting some of the things. He'll hear something about blockchain and he's like, that's really cool. But he's too incentivized to not fully get it. I mean, he is right there with the big fiat machine. I mean, he can counterfeit all he wants.
Yeah, because
but it's great. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, but it's great that conversation is happening in his house, in the White House. Like, that is really, like, when I first came in, I was just like, what? Are you kidding me? That this is now compared to where we were with Chokepoint 2.0 and Elizabeth Warren's crypto army. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was going to add something similar, that is great that he has the advantage that, for example, for me, what I have seen from here, actually, first, I think that, yeah, I kind of analyzed Donald Trump, and I also think that he's like starting, he's in the road, he's in the right path, but he has the advantage that had, for example, the Senator Loomis, that, for example, when I hear Loomis and when I hear Trump, I hear way different things. Loomis, I think she's a real Bitcoiner and she really, really gets it. That's my feeling, because she even talks with some technical stuff about Bitcoin, right? So he says, probably she knows a lot, and she's pushing a lot of laws, Bitcoin laws. So I think that's one of the advantages in the house to have real Bitcoiners around. That
absolutely
is the same with Bukele, for example. He has been surrounded with a lot of Bitcoiners. So, yeah. By the way, have you been in El Salvador or not?
No.
Oh, okay. So yeah, whenever you want to explore the Bitcoin.
Yeah. Clearly, I've been following, and I love the story. And I've talked to Max and Stacy, and my friend Puncher is building down there. And yeah, I think it's amazing what's happening. Super happy for all the people down there. So happy for them.
Yeah, there's a lot of grassroots efforts still putting apart all the noise about the IMF and etc. The grassroots efforts are still there, and I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
In the other day. Yeah. Another thing that I would like to explore is that, let's say that for people who are just starting to question the financial system, that I think that is one of the main topics that we have been discussing today. What's the most important thing to learn, or better say, to unlearn about money? What do you think?
I think the most important thing to unlearn is that currency is not money. They're two separate things, and that's One of the biggest obstacles for people to fully understand Bitcoin, they try to compare Bitcoin to the dollar, and they forget that the dollar was just a coupon, just a receipt for actual money, which was gold. And so they've got a valet ticket. They don't have the car. The car is money, but they've got the valet ticket. They don't have the coat. They have the coat check. And so they're saying, like, I don't understand Bitcoin. You know, what's it backed by? I can't touch it. I can't hold it. But that's because they're comparing it to a currency. So I think once they start to learn that a currency is something that a government issues, and like a river, like electricity, it's meant to move fast. It's a hot potato. I just got it. Let me quickly get what I want, I need. But now convert it to money to save, because you can't with this. And they can't. They're like, where is the money? Where can I save? So they have to invest, and they take all these chances. But now we have it. Now we have Bitcoin. Now you can save. Yes, we still have gold, and you can do that. And gold has beaten the stock market over the last 10 years. But that's just because within the last year, it's been going like this. For a long time, it has sat flat. And also, try dividing it. Try taking it with you somewhere. And tell me how much gold there is. Ask 10 gold experts how much gold there is in the world, and they'll give you 10 different answers. Ask any Bitcoiner, and they'll tell you within 10 minutes the exact, down to the Satoshi, that we have. And that's the big difference. It's not just that it's scarce. It's knowably scarce. Because a lot of gold people are like, oh, it's scarce. There's just one planet. Like, I don't know. And there's asteroids.
Absolutely. You know that, have you read, by the way, The Big Print from Lawrence Lepper or not?
I haven't. No, I'm familiar, but.
Yeah. Because actually that's one of the things that I love about his book. Sometimes I mention it here in the podcast, but I think he has done a really good job. For example, for me, that I'm not from the United States, to learn, to understand American history, and not just American history, but the monetary system. It's really interesting how he presents, let's say, all the cycles that have been, you know, for example, the bubble of 2018 and the COVID bubble. And then, well, his thesis is that eventually everything, because it's unsustainable, and also because what you mentioned, that we have been faced on inflation, eventually will be a big print, right? But it's really interesting, because he has been a gold bug for his entire life. And once he discovered Bitcoin, that's why I remember now that you're saying, if you ask to any gold bug how many gold are. But once he realized that there's something that is actually really scared, he pivoted everything, even his business, into the Bitcoin. So yeah, and it's really interesting. So shout out to Lawrence Lepper, because he has a great book explaining those things and actually how Bitcoin is actually way better than gold, right? So just because of that simplicity that is a scarce, and well, then he explained it a little bit technical, but yeah. Yeah. We're gonna start wrap it up for a little bit. You'll have two more questions for you, because time flies. Yeah. We almost have an hour. But I don't know. Like, actually I have a couple of questions, but I want to still focus on the grassroots efforts, and really for people that are listening about Bitcoin for the first time. You know, like, I don't know, for example, you have changed from Hollywood to real estate and then into Bitcoin. So what lessons, it could be good or bad, have you taken from real estate experience that you wish more people understand or learn more related into the value of money or Bitcoin?
I mean, I guess I could just say in general that you have to mine fiat to save in Bitcoin in the first place. If Bitcoin is just your savings technology, you need to first make fiat. And so, what real estate and Hollywood, both those things have taught me, is that you just have to give people what they want. You have to find out what they want and do that. Do that better or faster or more efficiently than anyone else. And you will mine all the fiat you want. You have to just provide value. Some people just are doing something and they're like, oh, I don't understand. I'm not making much money. It's like, well, you're not providing value. You know, solve a problem. People have problems and they will pay for a solution. And, you know, so whatever it is that they do, whatever their field is, whatever they work in, I feel like if some people would just think a little bit harder about that, they might they might do better.
Absolutely. And the other thing is that it wasn't related that I want to ask you, because we have seen that now that Bitcoin is becoming mainstream, right? But still, that's why I like to talk about grassroots efforts. What do you think that we should still focus on right now that Bitcoin are becoming mainstream? And I'm talking for the
self-custody.
Bitcoiners. All right. That's, yeah, that's where I was wanted to leave this. That's important thing that we still need to talk about.
Yeah, just because there's going to be, it's not bad, but there are going to be so many other opportunities and ways to get Bitcoin exposure, but most of them are shares in something else, not owning actual Bitcoin. Many of them are just surrogates. Some of them are adjacent to Bitcoin. And so people can have some of the price appreciation of Bitcoin, but they don't have the utility of Bitcoin, which is to be money, to transfer peer-to-peer. And so, you know, depending where you live, depending what your situation is, not everyone wants that. But, you know, I don't want a sticker on my window that says I'm a gun owner. I want to own the actual gun. Now, the people that have that sticker, they have an ETF. They have a share in a treasury company. And that might work for some people. That might deter some people away saying, oh, that guy has a gun. So I have a little bit. It's like a gun, but it's not the gun. Bitcoin and self-custody is the gun. You have the utility. You have the rights of it. And no one can take that away from you. It's the one thing. It's really the only thing, I would argue, that you own. Because anything else you think you own can be taken away from you. Or it deteriorates. Bitcoin can't be that. So I think self-custody is ridiculously important.
Absolutely. My two last question, this one I always ask to Bitcoiners, what is the most valuable thing that Bitcoin has provided into your life? And I'm not talking about the monetary value.
It really is just the revelation that our whole system is broken, and that because it's obfuscated, because it's not transparent. When you learn how simple money should be, and how transparent it should be, it exposes how much they don't tell you. And that to me has been one of the most valuable things, as far as like, what's the revelation? What are the big curtains that are being opened? You know, and you see the wizard and you're like, oh my God, you're the one doing this. And that's it. I don't think most of us have ever, we shouldn't have to know how money works, by the way. We shouldn't have to understand what money printing is and quantitative easing and the Fed's role. We shouldn't have to, but we've learned it as Bitcoiners. And now we see like, oh, wow, we have to start telling people how this works, because that's what's happening, right? We're building Noah's Ark and we're telling everyone, look, it's raining. They're not telling you it's raining, but it's raining. We can now see it. Come on in the boat. You can escape that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually something that that you said that is really interesting. That we shouldn't have been learning about these things if it is right in the first place, right? So
yeah.
But now we need to fix things, and we have the tool, the actual tool to fix those things that are broken. Yeah, and my last question is that first, where can people find you? And if you want to add something that probably I didn't ask and you think that is valuable to add, now's the time.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Do I need to add that last question or no? You do that later?
Yeah, we'll do it at the end.
Do it at the end. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if that's what you meant by the last question. I'm just on X, you know, proof of money. And I make a ton of videos. People go to my highlights tab on my profile. I've got like 20, 30 videos. And they're all different education videos. And those are fun making on all aspects of Bitcoin. And no, and unless there's anything you can think of, I'm not sure what we didn't cover in this realm.
Yeah, we cover a lot of things. At least I try. It's a dream. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, now Terrence, thank you very much for your time and
sure
stopping by BitCorner.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to discuss about later in the future. But yeah, thank you very much. And guys, yeah, see you next week. Ciao.